All right, welcome back to the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. This is episode 38, so that's the Brandon Bolden episode, or perhaps even Mr. Bloody Sock himself, Kurt Schilling. Tonight we have a massive show for you today, a really, really awesome show from BostonSportsJournal.com. We have Greg Bedard coming on the show, and also the head Philly writer for Barstool Sports, Smitty, is also coming on as well, obviously to talk Eagles. We're going to be talking mostly Patriots with Bedard, but get into a little bit of Eagle stuff as well. So really exciting episode for you. We also have some segments. So we are doing This Week in Sports History, as you always do. We're doing the three-minute drill. And I'm also starting a top 10 countdown this week of Patriots games that I've attended. Okay, so it's just the games that I've been to. It only includes home games and also no Super Bowls. Also, I wasn't there. My buddy was getting married during the Saints comeback in 2013, and I left the epic Ravens playoff game at halftime because my wife was sick. So I'm a good husband. What can I say? It's the way it's got to be. So anyways, those games won't be in there, but there are some really awesome games in there, and I'm going to give you 10 through 6 tonight or this episode, and I will give you 5 through 1 next episode. So enjoy it, and let's get started. Okay, so first up is my interview with Greg Bedard from BostonSportsJournal.com. It's a good one, so I hope you enjoy it. All right, we're going to welcome onto the show the owner and NFL columnist of BostonSportsJournal.com, a man who around here at least needs absolutely no introduction. Used to write for MMQB and The Globe, Greg Bedard. Welcome to the show, Greg.
Hey, Pat. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So obviously a hell of a game last weekend. You know, so many things to kind of go over and look at and whatnot. And, you know, a lot of heroes there with Brady and Amendola and Stephon Gilmore at the end. But two guys that I really wanted to focus on that you've done a good job kind of highlighting, but maybe a lot of people didn't notice as much, were Trey Flowers and Malcolm Brown. If you want to just touch on them a little bit, I want to talk about, you know, their impact on the game.
Yeah, I'm actually, as we're talking, I'm actually like halfway through the defensive film. What happened this week is that the NFL, the coaches' film that you can get through Game Pass, like I try to wait as long as I can to watch it because the TV copy just doesn't show you enough, especially when it comes to, you know, line play, defensive line, offensive line, stuff like that. And it was completely screwed up on Monday night and Tuesday morning. It was completely out of sequence. And so I had to just go off the TV copy when I went on Feller and Mass, and I just don't like to leave it at that. So finally today I've been able to go through the film and, you know, so far, I mean, you know, Trey Flowers, is a guy who's just, you know, he's been immense for this team for now a season and a half, probably since the halfway point of last season where he's just been, you know, he's been incredible. I mean, the length that he has along the edge, his toughness, he's extremely hard to stay blocked. I mean, he must be very frustrating for blockers. And we actually heard from on Twitter during the game, a couple offensive linemen from the NFL were talking about how his arms are like 12 feet long and you can't get into his chest. And you know, that's what you see on film is that he's so tough. And, you know, most guys along the edge, you can, you know, twist them, turn them, get a little opening. But the thing is like he's so strong not only in his upper body but his lower body as well, where he just doesn't allow himself to get blocked. He's great at getting off blocks. I was just watching a play where it was strung out to the sideline. I think it went for no gain or one yard. And, you know, he just strung it out along the edge and made the play. I mean, it's just a tremendous underrated play. And then, you know, Malcolm Brown's a guy who's really been interesting. I think he would have gotten more press this year if he didn't get injured in the middle of the season because he's really grown up a lot this year. You know, not that he's been bad or anything previously in his career, but he really sort of took a step forward this year. I would notice in practices leading up that he was, you know, he was taking some leadership along the line, and, you know, that's continued. And, you know, and for me, this game, you know, my game preview was, you know, I did four players on the spot, and, you know, one of them was Malcolm Brown, just because Linder, the Jaguar center, first of all, is excellent, and he was coming off a game against the Steelers where he completely dominated, and he was the reason why they could run the ball. You know, whether it's making the initial blocks or making double teams, getting off to the second level, he was just awesome. And so if he was able to do that again against the Patriots, they were going to have a hard time getting off the field. And you can look at the very first snap, and I'm going to highlight this when my column is out later tonight or tomorrow on Thursday at BostonSportsJournal.com. The first snap of the game, Brown lines up head up on Linder, and they go to run up the middle. They try to double-team Malcolm Brown, and he just will not be moved. And it goes for, I think, 1 yard. And you saw that consistently in this game. And that is so – that's – you know, I think the comparison that I'm going to make is that this is – he's becoming – he's now becoming Vince Wilfork. I mean, we heard about him when they drafted him. He could be like Vince, the successor. It was hard to see. He played underrated and unheralded like Vince did for a while, but – he wasn't really making the impact in big games that Vince would make. And this game sort of, he grew up a lot. Not this, this was totally in character with what we've seen down the stretch. He's been awesome. And so I just think that, you know, Malcolm Brown's just done a tremendous job. And, you know, you get those two guys, Brown in the middle, Flowers on the edge, and they're as consistent as they are. You know, that's a really good base for this defense to sort of build off of.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. And especially now, you get the Super Bowl coming up, and the Eagles are a running team as well. Clearly, the Jaguars were a running team, and they had success throwing it too. But, you know, having guys like that are so important. And I really thought, too, there were a few plays that I noticed Flowers was actually head up on Linders, the center. And one's beat him clean and forced a bad throw or throwaway. And then another time beat him and got double teamed and kind of bounced off of two guys and, you know, and got some pressure into the backfield. And I thought, you know, Flowers is one of those unique guys that he is so big and so strong that he can play on the outside, but he can also play on the inside because of his quickness and because of his strength. He can't really get pushed around down there. And I mean, the guy is awesome. He's really, really been a force, certainly more this year. I think people notice him more this year because of what he did last year. So they're looking for that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the way he finished off last season, I mean, you know, even going into the Super Bowl, I think I was using phrases like, you know, burgeoning star or, you know, but he certainly arrived in the Super Bowl. I thought he was one of their best players in the game, and that's, you know, continued this year. And, you know, you're right. You do see him kicked inside. They like to do that at times in the sub packages. I actually think a nice subtle change that they've made this year over the course of the season is they've moved Wise outside in the sub package rushing, where at times earlier in the year they would have him on the inside. And I remember even telling Dietrich Wise this in the locker room one day. I went up to him and I was like, "Psst, you need to be on the outside more." And he's like, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, you know, your length, because we all see how long Wise's arms are, he's able to use them much better on the outside when he can, you know, strong arm, you know, an offensive tackle. And when he was on the inside, he's so long and lanky that, you know, he was easy to be moved because he doesn't have the biggest lower body in the world. But you put him on the outside, and all of a sudden, he uses a long arm on those tackles, and it's tough. And then you have Flowers, who can rush anywhere. And then Butler next to him, I think we've seen it in the past couple of weeks, that their sub-package rushers have become much more effective. And I think it's because it's what the Patriots always do. You know, they evaluate their guys, and they're constantly tinkering with things to put them in the best position possible to accentuate their strengths and hide their weaknesses. And I think, you know, Wise moving him from the inside to the outside has really been a smart move. And I think it's made everybody better, and it's made their pass rush more effective over the past I would say month of the season.
Yeah, makes sense. And I do, just to kind of hit on that point that you were just making, I think that that's one of the things that separates the Patriots coaching staff from every other coaching staff. And, they don't have some of the elite talent that other teams have. They have some really good players, but there are better players on better teams, on other teams as well. But the thing is that they, I think, understand what their players can do better than anybody else in the league. And they don't put they well they, not that they don't, but they try not to put their players in a position where they can't be successful. And so they don't say, okay,
Absolutely.
you can't do this, but you're the only guy that can do it, so here you go, try to figure it out. They scheme it differently to say, okay, let's have somebody else do this because we know that this guy can't do it. Even though we're supposed to have this guy cover him, he can't, so someone else has to do it.
I totally agree with you, and I think the best, there's plenty of examples, but I would say the best illustration is Patrick Chung in his second tour of duty with the Patriots, because his first tour of duty, and I know Belichick touched on it today about how, he made mistakes with Chung when he was here the first time. Because, look, I mean, let's be honest. When he was a free agent and he was leaving, the Patriots made no effort to bring him back. They were just like, okay, second round pick. It hasn't worked out. Good luck to you. And that was because, the guy just is not good at playing deep safety. He's not good in space. And they constantly put him in that position the first time around. They did not, for whatever reason, really figure it out, their three safety thing, until later on. So they bring him back. And I remember this from that training camp when his first training camp back. And I remember writing this, and I got some flack from some of the Patriots coaches about it down the line. Where I said, if Patrick Chung is playing deep safety for this team, the safety position is going to be a complete disaster. And, I maintain that. And it ended up not being a disaster because they didn't put him at deep safety. They basically created a new position for him, where he was basically like a linebacker. He was a sub-package linebacker. They put him up near the line of scrimmage. It allowed him to get his nose in against the run. He could go man-to-man against tight ends because, if you put him in zone, he had a tougher time with that. But if you put him head up on a tight end, he does a fine job. And I remember after the Seattle Super Bowl, I was in a locker room after the game, and Brian Flores, who was the safeties coach at the time, I think he's coaching linebackers now, he's probably going to be the defensive coordinator next. All of a sudden, I get this like tap on my shoulder in the locker room, and he's like, you said we couldn't do it. What do you think now? And I was like, I don't know what you're talking about. I picked you to win the Super Bowl before the season, and I picked you to win this game. Like, so he was like, okay, all right. And so he went away, and I thought about it for a second. I was like, oh, I know what he's talking about. He's talking about the whole safety stuff from training camp. And so I found him again in the locker room, and I said, look, I said you guys would be a disaster if Chung was playing safety. All credit to you guys. You didn't put him at safety. He's like, oh, we did. And I'm like, no, you didn't. He's like, you played snaps at safety. I was like, yeah, about five or six this year. And he finally relented and said, no, you're right. We kind of created a new position for him. But that's the, unless the Patriots adjust, Patrick Chung is not the Patrick Chung that we've seen this season. And so that's just an example of how they do those sorts of things. The way they mix and match their front seven is also another way that they do that. And I think there's no question. I mean, from being around the league and covering different teams, not every team does this. And it's a big reason why the Patriots are as successful as they are.
Right, absolutely. Well, I was looking at someone tweeted out some numbers, his numbers this year in coverage, and they're like ridiculous. It's like something like a 40 something percent completion percentage with like a 70 something average, or 70 something quarterback rating when targeting him. Just really strong, solid coverage numbers from a
Yeah,
guy
I saw
who,
those.
like
Jeff
you said,
Howe
was
tweeted them
bad.
out, and Jeff's entitled. We all keep our own stats and stuff like that. I don't know how Jeff does it. I don't like doing, me personally, I don't like doing coverage statistics just because you know, how do you evaluate when a guy's in zone? Do you put that on the guy or do you put that on the team? Like if you can't quantify every play like you can, like I'm very interested in offensive line and defensive line work because you can, in my mind, you can quantify. Sometimes you can't discern, you know, who might have been at fault in certain plays, and I'll put it on the team. But like, I mean, I know there was an example, like the big play that Delanie Walker had in the Titans playoff game, like that was because Chung did not drop into his zone correctly. Now, did Jeff give that to him or did he give that to the team? I don't know. And then Chung also, you know, in my opinion, he was responsible for the first touchdown with Mercedes Lewis in this game. And that's all fine and all. I mean, you know, not everybody's going to be perfect on every play, but, you know, you just hope that this is why I evaluate every play the same. Like I don't just because Stephon Gilmore makes a pass breakup on fourth down to win the game, to me that's not any different than a play in the second quarter. You know, just because, you know, they're all the same and they could all be a big play. And so, you know, I think over the course of the game against the Jaguars, even though he had that touchdown against Lewis, you know, Chung was outstanding in this game and has become an invaluable player for this defense.
For sure. Yeah, I agree. So, all right. So let's shift gears to next week. And we'll talk a little bit about the Super Bowl. I know your guy, and I think probably the best player on the Eagles defense is Fletcher Cox.
Yep.
Can you talk a little bit about him and then some problems the Patriots might have with him?
Yeah. You know, Fletcher Cox is just, you know, he's one of these players that just, he presents a lot of difficulties just because, you know, he can play so many different ways. You know, he's, you know, you're talking about a guy who's, you know, 6'4" and 310, but, you know, he really plays like he's, you know, 6'2" or 3 and about 260, 270. Like he is the definition of sort of a tweener between, you know, he's a handful for interior guys to block because of his quickness. He's a handful for outside guys to block because he's long. Like, you know, he just, and his motor never quits. I mean, you know, he doesn't put up the biggest numbers in the world. Like, he only had 5.5 sacks, and I think he's had 34 in, you know, 6 years. But, you know, in terms of down-to-down impact on a game between getting pressure on the quarterback but also against the run, he's a difficult matchup. And, you know, I mean, but, you know, I think – and this whole Eagles front is extremely difficult, but I think, you know, what the Patriots were able to do against the Jaguars on Sunday night certainly bodes well because, you know, I don't know, you could make an argument that the Jaguars are better. I mean, I think they're about the same, you know, but, you know, the Patriots did a nice job against the Malik Jacksons and Darius and Calais Campbell. You didn't hear much from in that game. And Ngakoue, you know, the offensive line I thought played terrific in that game. And so, you know, Vinnie Curry and Jernigan and Brandon Graham and Cox and all those guys, they're going to have to deal with these players. Chris Long at times, they're certainly going to be coming in waves, but that the Patriots were able to handle the Jaguars like they were able to do, I think, was a terrific sign for the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think to me, at least, it's just my personal opinion, that's really the matchup. You're not going to beat the Patriots in a shootout. It's not going to happen. And so it hasn't happened before. And so to me, I just look at it and say, okay, well, if the Patriots can score against the Eagles defense, then they win the game. And, you know, I know that's an oversimplification, but I do have some numbers to back that up. I talked about it a little bit in the show last week. So people that listened to me last week, I'm repeating this, but that's okay. 20 points is a threshold for the Patriots in the playoffs. 20 points is a threshold for the Patriots, as you know, it is for a lot of teams, mm-hmm. But since 2007, the Patriots have played now, I think it's now 21 playoff games. In 15 of them, they scored 20 or more points, and they're 14-1 in those 15 games. And in six, they've scored under 20 points, and they're 0-6. And Belichick all time with the Patriots, 23-2, 20 or more, and 2-7 under 20. And the last one was the 0-3 Titans game. So it's like if you don't score, if the Patriots score over 20, you're not going to beat them. The only two games they've lost over 20 was the Jets game when they scored a garbage time touchdown to put them at 21.
Yep.
And the Colts game in the 0-6 AFC Championship game. And those are the only two. And so it's like if they get over that 20-point mark, it's almost impossible to beat them at that point.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, I mean, certainly, you know, the battle up front is important, but that can only work, like, you know, we'll take this Jaguars game, for instance. I mean, you know, the Jaguars, you know, have a great defensive line, but the thing is like, you got to play tight coverage, and you got to make Brady pat the ball a little bit for that pressure to get there. And I just thought the Jaguars, I mean, certainly some of it had to do with what the Patriots did schematically, putting guys in motion, some of their, you know, sets, which, you know, Josh McDaniels did everything on purpose. He always does to keep the coverage off of guys and give Brady some quicker throws. But, you know, it's incumbent to me, the game is going to be won or lost with the Eagles is if, you know, they have to find a way to cover quickly against the Patriots, because if you can do that, that means Brady is not as decisive where he's going with the ball. He holds it and then the rush can get there. You know, oftentimes against the Jaguars, the rush just didn't even have a chance to get there because Brady got the ball out of his hands. And that's sort of, you know, where the game, in my opinion, is going to be won and lost. And I think the other thing is the Patriots, off of this Jaguars game, I thought the Jaguars did a really good job of exposing the Patriots a bit on the edge in the pass game as far as their linebackers and outside linebackers. And I think there's a lot there for the Eagles to chew on, and it's going to be how do the Patriots adjust to that and anticipate. You know, I'm sure they're looking at it the same way I am and saying, like, geez, we had some issues covering guys out of the backfield. The Eagles are going to see that. They're going to try to do it. How are we going to deal with that if that's an issue in the Super Bowl? So, you know, those two, how the Patriots cover the running backs out of the backfield, how the Eagles cover the Patriots receivers in the short area of the field. They can't get Brandon Cooks a big cushion and allow those easy receptions. I think to me, that's where this game is going to be won and lost for both teams.
Okay. All right. Nice. So do you have, I mean, you know, like you say, you haven't really looked at the Eagles yet and you haven't broken anything down yet. Do you have a feeling as to which way you think it'll go? Like, do you think the Patriots will win? Do you think the Eagles will win? Who do you think has the advantage? I guess was what I would ask you.
I'm not there yet. I mean, I will say that I think this game's going to be extremely close. I have a hard time seeing either team falling way behind like some of these, you know, previous games that we've seen that the Patriots have been involved with. I need to study the Eagles offense a little bit more in Foles to see how effective I think he can be. You know, I do know that, you know, if the Patriots, you know, have some of the issues that they had against the Jaguars, the Eagles are much more competent offensively, and you have the whole, you know, Kansas City, Andy Reid influence on the Eagles offense with Doug Peterson. And so, you know, you automatically think that they have a chance to be better on offense against the Patriots, but I'm going to have to do a lot more film work to figure out whether I think the Eagles can pull off the upset.
Right. Okay. All right. And then, so, you know, every time it seems the Patriots, well, first of all, before I get into the next question, I think you're right about the close game. It makes sense. I mean, the Patriots, you know, Belichick's Patriots have been in seven so far, and they've all been decided by 4 points or less. So it makes sense. I mean, there's not going to be a blowout. And I do think that the teams are more evenly matched. I couldn't believe that Philadelphia was underdogs in back-to-back game. I mean, against Atlanta, I was like, are you nuts? Like, I thought Philly was going to crush Atlanta. And then I thought it was going to be a closer game on Sunday than it was. But I thought Philadelphia would beat Minnesota. I just thought they were a better team than Minnesota. And obviously that ended up being the case. But to be back-to-back underdogs as the number one seed, I mean, I can't imagine a number one seed was ever an underdog at any point, never mind in back-to-back games. And now they're in the Super Bowl, they're underdogs again. I mean, maybe that could help them, maybe it could benefit them, but at the same time, you know, they're not playing a team that's not ready for them. I think Minnesota just wasn't ready. That's what it looked like to me, at least. So,
I get so wrapped up, now that I'm back covering one team and it being the Patriots, like I focus all my attention on that team and what they have coming up. And so, like, you know, the NFC is almost like a foreign concept to me. And so I had no feel on those other games. I mean, other than, you know, look, I mean, you know, when it comes time for these games, I mean, you could, you know, you got to look at the quarterback matchup, and, you know, you had to think that, you know, the Falcons had the edge, overall on the Eagles, but the Vikings game was definitely different since it was Keenum, who I like, but you knew it was going to be a lot more in the Eagles' wheelhouse, but, you know, we'll have to see how that goes moving forward.
Right. So, next question for you really, to me, is that every time it seems like they've played in the Super Bowl, at least lately, that it seems like there's guys that come out of the woodwork that become the surprise hero of the game. So whether it was James White last year and Trey Flowers, who, you know, as you said, didn't really come out of the woodwork, but not a lot of people, wasn't a household name at the time. Obviously, Super Bowl 49, it was Malcolm Butler. And so do you think there's anyone on the roster that can kind of have that type of game for the Patriots where everyone after the game is like, oh my God, like, look at the impact that this guy had on the game, and no way we win without him.
Yeah, it's tough to say on this year's Patriots, because, you know, with the injury issues that they had, everybody's contributed, everybody's played a lot. I mean, I think, you know, one of the storylines of the week will be Eric Rowe, who used to be, he was draft pick of the Eagles, got traded to the Patriots. I'm sure he would love to have a big game against this team that, you know, basically gave up on him. He, as a nickelback, he certainly has a chance to, you know, influence the game. Even though he struggled, I'd say he struggled against the Jaguars. I think it's going to be somebody probably in the secondary. I could see this, as somebody having a couple picks in the game. It could be Rowe. It could be, Harmon as like the deep safety, getting a couple tips to him. Chung is certainly going to have a lot of opportunities lining up against Zach Ertz, who's a key guy for them offensively. On that side of the ball, I'd say those guys are the most likely. On the offensive side, they're pretty much dialed in with Lewis and White at this point. Burkhead didn't look like he's really healthy in the last game. You got to think that maybe Hogan gets in the mix a little bit more. It's not like, you know, I picked Dwayne Allen as one of my surprise guys in the AFC Championship game. And, I thought it was looking good once Gronk went out. I was like, oh, he's definitely going to get a garbage time touchdown or spring out of the backfield or something for a score and be sort of a big hero. But, you know, I think we all know the particulars on the Patriots offense, and I don't think anybody's really going to surprise in this game.
Yeah, it does make sense. I mean, I think James White, you mentioned, is interesting. He's an interesting case because I think in his last two regular seasons total, he has 8 total touchdowns in the last 2 regular seasons. And in the last 3 playoff games, he has 6 touchdowns. So he's clearly used a lot more in the playoffs than he is in the regular season for whatever reason. I'm not sure why, but maybe it's they're exploiting specific matchups in specific games. I have no answer for you there, but 3 touchdowns in last year's Super Bowl, 2 touchdowns in the divisional game, and then a touchdown in the AFC Championship game this year. So, just obviously he's the type of guy that I guess he just elevates his play in the playoffs, or they call his number. I mean, obviously last year in the Super Bowl, they called his number a lot more than they
typically have. I just think it's I think it's just happenstance that, like, you know, he just happens to be the guy. I mean, you know, James White, he's always been an excellent receiver. He hasn't been much of a running back between the tackles. But I think, you know, the reason that he gets those is, you know, I mean, it's not like they're, I mean, they certainly run, they always have these plays where he's, you know, offset and they'll run these pick play wheel routes. They always drag those out at a certain point in time. But a lot of times it's just, you know, Brady goes through his checkdowns and the other team's playing good defense. And when, you know, when the Patriots are going up against these defenses, you know, in these championship games or in the playoffs that, you know, are there for a reason and they don't have a lot of coverage busts like we'll see, you know, in the regular season all the time. You know, it's that much harder for, you know, Brady to find open guys. So he ends up going down to the checkdown and, you know, White has tremendous balance. He's got tremendous foot quickness. And, you know, when he gets the ball in his hand in space, you know, he's certainly dangerous, but I just think it's more happenstance than anything.
That does make sense. I mean, Vereen kind of did the same thing when he was here.
Yep.
Nothing really in the regular season.
Woodhead.
Right. Right. True. So, all right. So two more questions for you. I guess number one for me, I am doing, you know, this week and next week, a top 10 games that I've ever attended before. So I've actually never been to a Patriots away game, but I've been to quite a few at home. And I didn't know if there was one for you, not counting last year's Super Bowl. I'm assuming you were there. That one doesn't count because that's like obviously, right? So your most memorable game that wasn't a Super Bowl that you attended for the Patriots could be because it was an unbelievable game, could be because it was, you know, something personal to you, something like that.
For the Patriots?
Yeah.
Or in general?
Let's stick to Patriots, although if there's one that really sticks out for in general game, you can go with that one too.
Well, I mean – you know, I think you can go with, I guess I would probably go with the, you know, I was covering the Packers at the time, but the 07 NFC Championship game, Packers, Giants, and then, you know, following that up with the Super Bowl, with the Patriots going for 19-0. I mean, it's hard to top that one. And just, you know, the tension that was just in the stadium from beginning to the end and just the back and forth and, you know, the great plays on both sides of the ball. I mean, you know, to me, it would be hard to top that just considering how much was at stake in terms of NFL history with, you know, what the Patriots had, you know, had going on. So for me, it would be the 07 NFC Championship game and Super Bowl. Those two combined were just two phenomenal games to be there and be a part of, and it was awesome.
Makes sense. I mean, freaking Brett Favre doesn't throw that goddamn interception. The Patriots win that Super Bowl because I just feel like there's no way the Packers would have beaten the Patriots that year. And the freaking Giants, just for whatever reason, they just, you know, I mean, Coughlin got them going and everything else. But I mean, I think I've talked about it on the show before. I think it's, that to me is the worst loss in the history of sports. Just what was riding on it, the helmet catch play, like such a fluke play from a guy who literally was the last pass he ever caught in an NFL uniform. Actually, he wrote a book a few years later and he had like almost committed suicide a few years earlier than that, struggled with depression his whole life. Really kind of an amazing story with David Tyree, but just an awful, awful experience for anybody that's a Patriots fan. But from an outside perspective, if you're not rooting for the Patriots, I mean, you're right. I mean, I can't imagine anything more memorable than something like that, where they're going for a perfect season, 19-0. It's crazy.
Yeah. And that Favre pass, you know, you mentioning that, I mean, I just remember it was almost like, you know, you saw him make the pass and it was almost like time stood still and like, you know, the air just temporarily went out of Lambeau Field, and, you know, not that there was a lot because it was like sub-zero temperatures that day. But, you know, the Packers, you know, looked like they were on their way to the Super Bowl, and then, you know, Favre let go of that, and as it was in the air, you were just thinking to yourself, like, oh, my God, he just threw a pick, and it's going to end the game. And it was just it was incredible theater to watch there at Lambeau, and then the Super Bowl. You know, yeah, it was certainly very memorable.
Yeah, that's crazy. It's funny that you say that because I have that now. I obviously watched it at home after the championship game, because the Patriots had their early game that year, so we came home and were able to watch the game. And I have that same memory of that Favre throw where, like, because you could see it on the telecast as he's letting it go, I'm like, he's gonna, like, before he even threw it, you could tell it was getting picked off. And I was like, you gotta be kidding me. It was just like the Giants, like the one team I didn't want to play. And there they were. I'm like, God damn it. So, but yep. You know, that's the way it goes. So anyways, all right. So I want to ask you one final question here. I do think it's interesting. There was a lot of offensive and defensive line talk on here. And so for someone who's not a hardcore football fan, I apologize. But those of you that are hardcore football fans, you know that, like, the game is literally won on the offensive and defensive lines. As they say, yep. it is true. So with that being said, I think next year the tackle position for the Patriots could look totally different. You get three guys up for free agency next year. You got Waddell, you got Cam Fleming, and you got Nate Solder. I personally don't know if Solder's coming back. I don't know. I mean, it seemed like at the beginning of the year there was some thought that he might retire at the end of the year. That might be totally unfounded. I have no idea.
I asked him point blank. I mean, you know, it's a legitimate question. I mean, because you're talking about, first of all, Nate Solder is up for NFL Man of the Year, and I think he absolutely deserves to win it. You know, as a reporter, I try not to play favorites or, you know, show favoritism in that way. But, I mean, you know, and I get this question often from, you know, my friends who are Patriots, my friends and family who are Patriots fans. They always want to know, like, you know, who are the real deal guys on the team that, you know, I could feel good rooting for, and Solder is always, like, number one on my list. I mean, he is one of the nicest guys that you will ever meet. And actually, he, you know, his niceness, like, you know, you wondered how effective he might be, because normally to be a great offensive lineman, you need to have an edge. And, you know, he's never been great. He threatened before his cancer, he threatened to become great. He never quite got there. Maybe having more of an edge would have put him over the top. I don't know. But, you know, the bottom line is Nate Solder is a tremendous guy. He's a very smart guy. He's a guy who majored in biology at Colorado. So if there's anybody, and considering what's been going on with his son, if there's anybody who would, you know, be acutely aware of the concussion issues and the impacts, it would be Nate Solder. And, you know, there were rumors about him in the offseason contemplating retirement. So, you know, I asked him point blank in training camp, like, you know, did you think about not coming back this year? And you know, the way that he is sort of non-denial told me a lot. I mean, because this is a guy I've had a lot of conversations with over the years. And so I think it was definitely on his mind. I don't know. I think ultimately it's going to be how important football is to him. I don't know that. Only he knows that. So I could certainly see him retiring. I think the Patriots, you know, think it's very – there's a low chance that he would sign elsewhere. I think it's either he re-signs with them, which I think they're, you know, considering I don't think he wants to move with his son and the hospitals and things like that. Right. So I think it's either he's back or he retires. And, you know, look, in, you know, Adrian Waddle, you know, Fleming, I could see both of them returning. I don't see either of them getting many offers on the market. And I think the Patriots could re-sign them cheap, which I think, you know, will probably end up happening. And then, you know, we need to see what kind of progress Antonio Garcia, one of their draft picks, made in the course of the year. I know he had that weird illness that none of us really even know what went on. I don't know if he had mono or what the deal was, but they put him on NFLI, and we haven't seen him basically since then. But he was a guy, he certainly has the tools to be a left tackle in the league, but he knew he needed to get a lot stronger. So maybe he's done that in this offseason. And I do think that they're looking for him to come and compete for a starting job next year. And I think if Nate's back, I don't think it's just going to be his job. I mean, we'll have to see, but that's my feeling at this point in time.
Yeah. I mean, that was the one thing that I thought was interesting was Garcia. And I know when Solder got drafted, And obviously he was a first round pick as opposed to Garcia being a second round pick. But when Garcia may have been a third round, either way, it doesn't matter. When Solder got drafted, Light was still playing left tackle. Solder was healthy and I believe ended up starting at right tackle that year. If I'm correct, I think the right tackle got hurt. And so he ended up starting at right tackle and then moving over once Light retired.
Yeah, I think Light was still here. Yep.
And so I was thinking maybe the same type of thing would happen this year with Garcia coming in. He was that same type of guy with Solder when he came out, tall, lanky guy who needed to build muscle. And it was like after a year in the league, he was ready to take over at left tackle. And I thought Garcia might be that same type of way. Of course, he gets, you know, whatever it is, the illness or whatever he had, didn't play at all this year. And so, you know, I was obviously that kind of puts that on the shelf. So you have no idea what he'll look like you said. I also thought it was interesting, and the guy that we haven't talked about since training camp, Connor McDermott, who was from UCLA, a tackle, and one of the guy that I know who does some scouting, he thought McDermott was a legit tackle prospect, and was surprised to see the Patriots ended up keeping Cole Crosston on the active roster instead of McDermott. I don't know if you ran into any of that in training camp. I just thought that was interesting because McDermott was a guy that I would size-wise looked at and was like, oh, okay, that guy seems like he's big enough. And the guy I talked to said, you know, we thought might be a little bit of a project, but had NFL skills and tools to be an actual tackle in the NFL.
Yeah, I think Dermott ended up with, I think it was a Buffalo that he ended up with released. I'm trying to find any of my notes, but, you know, I'm trying to remember. I vaguely remember McDermott in training camp. I thought that he was a guy who really sort of struggled down the stretch in training camp. I'm just trying to look. Yeah, I had him on my... this was my initial installment of the 53. I had him released. I had, and this is really before we didn't know what was going on with Garcia, but I had Solder, Cannon, Garcia, and Fleming making the initial team. This was my initial list. I don't know how it changed. You know, and I had both McDermott and Crosston off. Right. You know, I just think that, you know, McDermott was a guy, just, to me, if I recall correctly, it looked like he struggled throughout training camp. It was just, I think the Patriots at the end of the day, they knew they needed guys with experience. I was surprised that they kept both Fleming and Waddle. I thought it would have been one or the other with a young guy. But I remember Waddle suffered an injury at one point at the end of training camp, and that really sort of affected things, and you didn't know whether he was going to be available. I don't think he was available at the beginning of the season for like a week or two, and so that kind of determined that. And that sometimes those cuts, they just come down to, you know, numbers and injuries and things like that. So I think you know, I don't think it was any huge indictment on McDermott. I just think it was just sort of a numbers thing.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. So, all right. Well, again, I apologize to the people out there who are like, why the hell are you talking about Connor McDermott a week and a half before the Super Bowl? But it's important stuff. I think, you know, again, the tackle position is probably the second most important position on the field. If you think the quarterback position is that important, the guys that protect them are just as important. So something, and I know since you're such a big old line guy that I thought it'd be something I wanted to ask you about because it had been on my mind. So
you can never have enough O-line talk because, you know, whenever these Patriots games come, these Patriots seasons come to an unfortunate end, inevitably the talk goes to the offensive line. And, you know, and so I think it's vital to talk about those guys. I think they have a group that's really come along this year and has been playing its best ball in the postseason, which has not been the case for some of the offensive lines in the past for the Patriots. But, you know, what we've seen the past 2 weeks between the Titans and the Jaguars game, you know, certainly should give people confidence going into the Super Bowl against another very good front.
For sure. All right. Well, thank you for coming on. We really appreciate it. And Greg, where can they find you, Greg?
You can go to bostonsportsjournal.com. And check us out. You know, it's a subscription site. And don't think it's a whole lot of money. It's basically, you know, it's about $35 a year. If you buy a 3-year, it's like $2 a month, which is basically like a, you know, not going to Dunkin' Donuts once a month. But we also have a free section on there where, you know, some of our best stuff in the past we've made free that people could check us out, including my comprehensive game breakdowns and scouting reports and things like that. So, you know, if Patriots fans out there, if they want, you know, the real scoop on their team, they want an honest assessment, then they should check us out, because that's what I'm after at the end of the day.
That's true. I mean, and not only is it you, but it's also Chris Price, right? And Sean McAdam.
Yep. And Sean McAdam on Red Sox, Joe McDonald on Bruins, who knows hockey just tremendously well. And then Brian Robb, covering the Celtics, who's a real up and comer. But, you know, has a ton of support from people in the Celtics organization, who, including Danny Ainge, who retweeted my announcement of B Rob's hire. And so, you know, if you're looking for, I mean, basically what we're after is, you know, we just want, you know, we're not going to give you any clickbait. We're not going to give you any, you know, just stuff off the wall. I mean, we're going to report what we believe and what we know to be true, and, you know, give you the honest assessment of your teams that you deserve. We're not just there to cheerlead, but, you know, we're just there to, we'll tell you when things are going well, we'll tell you when things are not going well, and, you know, how things might get better.
I think it's a great idea. And, you know, I'm happy that somebody started something like this. You know, you run it yourself, so you don't have anyone to answer to. You don't have to hit a certain quota of anything. You guys can really do what you want. And you know, people that know that you are, you know, an upfront guy, and you're going to tell it like it is. And, you know, a lot of times you're going to focus on some of the mundane stuff that people may not be looking at. That may not be as flashy or sexy, but is going to, you know, the things that you focus on wins people games. And so if you really want to know the, you know, the games and what's going on and get a fair assessment of everything, like you said, I think there's no better place to go. And it, like I said, I mean, you're not getting, you know, you said it perfectly with the whole clickbait stuff. Like, you're not, I mean, obviously you want people to click on it, right? But it's not, hey, click on me, and just because of the headline, and then the inside doesn't have the substance to it. You know, you're writing stuff that, you know, people really can appreciate and learn a lot from. And so,
yeah, I mean, you know, the big thing in today's media is that, you know, you might say, well, there's stuff out there for free. Yeah, but those people, you know, you're paying a price somehow. I mean, you know, whether it's, you know, Comcast or the Globe or the Herald or whatever, you know, those people, they often write, okay, well, what's going to get me the most attention? So that doesn't matter to us, because we are just, we're beholden to our members. And, you know, what they want is what we do. I mean, we have a ton of, you know, Q&As. We have daily Q&As, you know, in terms of, there will be sometimes, you know, when I'll do emergency question and answers. If there's stuff breaking, like I think it was, you know, I think when they got Martellus Bennett, when they traded Jimmy Garoppolo, I did an emergency question and answer. So, you know, our members, you know, rule the roost. All I care about, or all we care about at the end of the day, is serving our membership. So if you buy in at BostonSportsJournal.com, then you have a say in how we do things. And so, you know, I think to me, that's a big selling point, and something that I would think would be worthwhile.
Yeah. No, it really is great. So if you're, you know, a Boston sports fan, definitely check it out, bostonsportsjournal.com. And they do have, like, you know, like Greg said, they have all the pricing on there. I think they have, you actually have like a lifetime thing, right, where you can buy it like for life and then you're done. So,
yeah, I mean, we put that up there basically just for like friends and family that, you know, wanted to support us. But, you know, all of a sudden now we have, you know, 85 lifetime members, and, you know, by people who believe in what they're doing, want a new independent voice, you know, from an outlet that isn't owned by one of the teams or isn't a rights holder for one of the teams. And so, you know, we're a small independent, you know, voice, and we anticipate being part of the scene for a long time to come.
Great. Yeah, we certainly hope so. So, well, again, thank you for coming on, and maybe we'll talk to you again soon. You never know.
Sounds good. Thanks, Pat. I appreciate it.
Okay. That was a great interview with Greg. We thank him for coming on again. Really cool of him to come on. And if you haven't checked out BostonSportsJournal.com, definitely do that. So we're going to get into the interview with Smitty from Barstool Sports. And so here we go. All right, we're going to welcome on to the show the head Philly writer from Barstool Sports, Smitty. Welcome to the show, Smitty.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. So you had a hell of a day yesterday. First, in the afternoon, wrote a blog about why you should be invited to the Super Bowl. Was actually compelling and convincing. I was like 100% convinced he needs to be at the game. And I actually, Clem and I tweeted back and forth a little bit about how it would be really bad karma for Dave to not have you go to the game. And you found out, of course, last night that you were going to the game. So I'm sure you must be pretty excited about that.
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's no secret that it was kind of a political move that I wrote that blog. I was given the option to give pitch them privately over a closed-door meeting, like, well, what my idea is and, like, why I should go. But I asked if I could do it on a blog, and he's like, well, why would you want to do that? And I'm like, you're a fucking idiot. There's obviously a reason why I do that. It's because I deserve to go and I get the crowd on my side. He's just like, okay, we'll see about that. And that's exactly what I did. And, you know, I've been the Philly blogger, or a Philly blogger, since 2011. I've been the full-time main Philly blogger since 2013. And from the jump, I've been blogging about the Eagles. And I've been doing videos out of my own pocket since 2013, going down to tailgates. And I've been doing it when they stunk. I've been doing it when they're good. And not only that, they've been decent videos that have done well for the site from the start. And to for them to go to the Super Bowl, and if it could be my literal Super Bowl, and even think about me not going was unacceptable. So I had to do whatever I could to try to get there.
Yeah, oh, I'm with you 100%. I mean, especially, you know, it's one thing if Barstool wasn't going and then not sending you. But if Barstool's going, like, you're the Philly guy. Like, you should, like, that would be like if the Patriots had lost and Chaps wasn't invited to go to see the Jaguars. It would have been like, wait, didn't he? Like, you can't, you know, so.
Yeah, and that rich fuck took Robbie Fox to go see McGregor Mayweather.
That's
so
true.
It's like, dude, like.
Good point. Although.
Come on, come on.
I mean, pretty much everybody in the entire world loves Robbie Fox. So, I mean.
Yeah.
You know.
I can't
mean,
not. Yeah. He's a fine looking lesbian.
So I do,
Robbie's,
though.
Robbie's a good kid.
I do though.
We're actually sending Robbie to cover Philly's Wing Bowl, which I covered like 3 years, which is like the biggest degenerate Philly thing possible. And you wake up at 2 a.m. Parking lots open at 4 a.m. and at 6 a.m. Wells Fargo Center, where the Sixers and Flyers play, fills up to the max to watch people eat wings, and it's just like a drunken fest of college kids. And then, like, middle-aged people who hate their lives, there's, like, no in-between. And we're sending Robbie Fox right into the pit of it. It's going to be great.
Holy shitballs. That's crazy. That is wild. That's going to be a little bit different crowd than what he's... Well, I mean, you got the nerd. The nerd population is a lot of those middle-aged, you know, guys who live in their basement or whatever. But I feel like it's becoming...
That's not these guys. These guys are fathers of three, hate their lives and wives. Need to get away, or fathers and three hated their wives, got divorced, and then got away.
Yikes.
Sort of things.
All right. Well, I am a father of three, but luckily I will not be attending that because I don't hate my life or my wife. I want to make that very clear to
there
everyone
you go.
Listening.
That's why you're like way in the Northeast and not in Philly.
Exactly, so. I suppose, yep. So I did have two issues with your blog that I wanted to point out to you. First of all, you said it was Tim Curran, the Patriots reporter. It's actually Tom Curran, the Patriots reporter. He
Fuck.
Is not the guy who played Pennywise the Clown. He is. That was Tim Curry.
No, that's Tim Curry. That's
that
Tim
was
Curry.
Tim Curry, but this Tom Curran. And also, the Eagles-Pats game was in 2015.
2015, I know. I got that wrong.
Well, you know why?
I went on, what is it, Boston Sports Night?
Yes.
The other night?
Yes.
Yeah,
Boston
with Tom
Night. Yep.
Curran.
Yeah.
Guy was just, like, ripping me the entire time. Like, come on, man. And then I found out, like, he was a huge story and stuff.
Yeah.
So it's cool. And they emailed me before. They're like, can you get a headshot up to us for the graphic? I'm just like, I don't have a headshot. Like, you know, you just go to my Instagram or a Google image. Like, I don't care what you take. Just think they'll take, like, a generic, like, face that's normal. They smile. And they take, like, me in my, like, joke fucking varsity jacket.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
School.
If you have not seen that image, you need to Google that image. Like, pause the podcast and Google the image because it is that good.
It was. It, I, I, it it's one thing if it's on the site or like on my Instagram account and it's like in context. It's another thing.
Totally just like out of context.
Some drunken Southie just like at a bar looking at that on the screen.
That's just fantastic.
Oh, it's hilarious.
Right.
Love it.
Oh, it's awesome. So, yeah, I saw her and I'm like, what the hell is that? I'm like, that's fantastic. So, anyways, the reason why I remember it being 2014, by the way, that game, is because...
2015. You're getting it wrong.
Oh, I fucked it up. Right. Yep. The reason why I remember 2015 is because that cost them the number one seed. And if they have the number one seed, they probably beat Denver and they go into the Super Bowl and probably stomp Carolina just like freaking Denver did.
Yeah, and, well, it also goes both way, you fucking Patriots ball washer. Like, you remember the worst, you're like a degenerate poker player. You remember the worst beats, but you don't remember when things go your way. Like, this season, when you get a lucky call at the goal line against the Steelers, that gives you guys home field advantage. Could be a completely
different
story. That's
not a lucky call.
If that call goes the other way, and you have to face Jacksonville at home, first round or in the divisional round, and then go to Pittsburgh, it could be a completely different tale like that year. When you had to go to Denver.
That's
very, admit that.
That's very true, except it was the right call, and it wasn't a lucky call.
Okay, well, so, just admit that. It could have very easily
it
gone the other way.
It's very true. No, it's very true.
Just like that Eagles game.
Very true. No, I mean, that's, you know, all valid points. I mean, just like the first Super Bowl when, you know, back in 01 when the Patriots needed like 97 things to happen for them to get a first round bye, and every single one of them did, including David Patton getting knocked out cold in Buffalo and fumbling the football, but him landing out of bounds while the ball was touching his leg in bounds, and so the ball was out of bounds because it was like, what the how the fuck did that happen? It was like, so it was, yeah.
Yeah, and just imagine if Mo Lewis doesn't knock out Drew Bledsoe.
Very true. Very true. Although my father, which I think he's crazy, but my father says even if Lewis didn't knock out Bledsoe, that
not
that was
a
Bledsoe's
shit
last start.
In hell.
I know. I'm with you, but
not a chance in hell. Because that team had to step up around Brady. I don't think they would have done that around Bledsoe.
No, they wouldn't have. Not if Bledsoe had just gotten benched.
And I will say this. And Bledsoe wouldn't have gotten benched. You know that. I know that. Yeah. That 2001 team reminds me of this Eagles team. Or this Eagles team reminds me of that 2001 team.
Yeah.
Not just from the quarterback position, but like how well they play together as a team. And just like the karma and the it factor. You just like have this feeling.
Right.
That they can, no matter what, they can play well together and get it done. Not a lot of superstars on the team. Yeah, they had Ty Law, they had Lawyer Malloy, they had Young McGinnis. But, like, Teddy Bruschi, great player, not, like, a Hall of Famer. They had Antoine Smith. Like, a lot of similarities. You know, like Fletcher Cox, young, up-and-coming. Malcolm Jenkins, great player. People are going down left and right. Second-string quarterback popping in. Like, you know, I'm not comparing Nick Foles to Tom Brady. Anyway, Carson Wentz, baby.
Right,
but not Nick Foles. But it's just like that team chemistry reminds me of this team.
Well, and sometimes that makes a huge difference. I mean, as you know, as you see, I mean, and that 0-1 team was not as talented as that Rams team, obviously.
Well, this team is not as talented as the Patriots.
Right, and so, you know, you never know what's going to happen. I mean, the fact that, you know, I have to say, you can replay the tape if you'd like, if you want to go back and listen to the podcast, but I actually picked the Eagles in both games against Atlanta and against Minnesota last week. I thought for them to be the number one seed and to be the underdog at home, I was like, are you kidding me? Like,
well,
you know, I don't know.
The main factor, number one, underdog is one thing when Carson Wentz is out. And people, I believed in Nick Foles because I saw what he did in 2013, that 27-2 season under Chip Kelly. Was ridiculous. I mean, you don't do that just byproduct of a system and coach. Like, you have to have it in you somewhere to be able to be that guy. That was one of the best seasons in quarterbacking history.
Right.
So I knew he could step it up and play well, and he did against the Giants, and Christmas night against the Raiders, and the meaningless game against the Cowboys didn't matter, and then he stepped it back up the second half Falcons, and then last game he saw what he did against the number one defense in the league.
Right.
You can call them underdogs for a reason, but at home, that team is a different beast. If this game was played in Philadelphia, I say the Eagles win no matter what. Since it's at a neutral field or away, it's completely up in the air. I don't think the Eagles win in Minnesota last week. I don't think they win in Atlanta or even at the Superdome if they would have played the Saints. At home, they beat anyone.
Yeah.
Nine times out of ten. Ten times out of ten at home.
You're right. Well, Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, you know, and that sometimes you have that team that just kind of gels together and plays that well and goes from there. I mean, I really do think that. And honestly, I just think defense, I mean, everyone talks about Foles and I get that, but it's more about defense to me than it is about anything else. And I want to throw some stats at you and you can actually throw them back in Portnoy's face and you can, you know, shoot me some credit for this one, but
his nose might deflect it, but I'll try.
So actually, the threshold for the Patriots is 20 points. Is the threshold for the Patriots in the playoffs since 2007? They've played 21 playoff games since 2007. So, which is just fucking ridiculous that they've played that many games. But they've played 21 playoff games since 2007. In 15 of those games, they've scored 20 points or more. They are 14-1 in those 15 games. In 6 games, they've scored under 20 points, and they're 0-6. And the one game they scored over 20-1 was the Jets in 2010. They scored 21 and scored a garbage time touchdown with 20 seconds left to go in the game. So if you keep the Patriots under 20 points, you win the game, period. And so to me, Nick Foles, I'm like, who gives a shit about Nick Foles? Unless he throws 5 interceptions, Nick Foles has nothing to do with Philadelphia's chance of winning. It all, to me, relies on Philadelphia's defense. If you can keep the Patriots under 20 points, that's how you beat them. If the defense isn't going to stop the Patriots and the Patriots are going to score 30 points, the Eagles have no chance at winning, in my opinion.
I agree to that, and I think the Eagles have a decent chance of doing right. that. Jim Schwartz was Buffalo's defensive coordinator 3 years ago, had some moderate to very good success against Bill Belichick. Excuse me. Eagles front four is very, very good. They don't blitz a lot. And in all honesty, they remind me a lot of the 07 and 2011 Giants, right. which obviously had some very good success in the Super Bowl against the Patriots. So I think the Eagles can very well step up. They've been overperforming all year on the defensive side. And there's no reason why they wouldn't this game.
Right. No, I mean, and it makes sense. I mean, I had Greg Bedard earlier on the show, and he was talking about, you know, Fletcher Cox, how he's one of the best young defenders in the game.
He's a man-child. He's a beast. He's something out of this world. You got to double-team him every time, and he still fucking breaks through.
Yeah.
He's the closest thing, and granted, it's different positions. Reggie White was a D-end. Fletcher Cox plays inside, but he's as closest thing to unstoppable as Reggie White.
Yeah.
Like,
which you're saying a lot. Yeah. No, it's true. And the thing is that the Patriots are typically good at taking away one elite player. Like, I think J.J. Watt has a half a sack in his career against the Patriots. So he's a great player, but they find ways to take him away. The problem with Cox is that he moves around a lot. So he doesn't play just one position. He plays the 3 technique, and then he's in the 1 technique, and then he's head up on the nose, and sometimes he plays outside. And so it's like, it's hard to account for a guy who's all over the place. And so I think that can present some problems. And like you said, with the 07 and 11 Giants, the key to beating the Patriots is rushing 4 and getting pressure. And if you can do that, now you have 7 guys in coverage, and you can play a man coverage with a few guys sitting in zones to try to prevent, you know, the quick passes and the timing routes. And, you know, if you start throwing that stuff off, that's where you beat the Patriots.
And that's what Jim Schwartz has basically been doing all season, is just not blitzing a lot, rushing 4 and just letting Tim Jernigan, Fletcher Cox, Brandon Graham, and Chris Long, like, eat. Like, Chris Long's going to make one big play. He's been making one big play a game this year. And he's going to make one, like, strip sack or something really, really good this game. And it's going to hurt you.
Let's hope
it's really going to hurt you.
Let's hope not. He played really well last year, so let's hope that doesn't happen. But you never know. So I think, too, Malcolm Jenkins is an interesting case because the first game of the year, and obviously, you know, the first game of the year with the Chiefs, like, you know, the offense was kind of sputtering. No one really was really on the same page, but Eric Berry was able to lock up Gronk one-on-one. And I haven't seen anybody else ever do that with success, ever. Cam Chancellor, Earl Thomas, nobody. And Eric Berry did it at the beginning of the year. And Jenkins, you know, again, Bedard said Jenkins is similar to Berry. Now, maybe he doesn't run quite as well as Berry does, but, you know, if he can lock up Gronk, or at least come close to locking up Gronk, I mean, again, that's another step in the right direction. Without Edelman there, now you're talking about it's just Danny Amendola and, you know, Cooks and Hogan and the backs out of the backfield. I mean, it's a tough ask kicking away their best receiver, but if they can do that.
All under assumption Gronk plays, which I think we're pretty much positive that unless his head falls off, like he's going to be out there.
Yeah.
But if memory serves me right, during that 2015 game, Malcolm Dixon had a pretty good game against Gronk.
Right.
So you might want to go back and check that film. And he is perfectly capable of locking up someone that's bigger than him. He's done it before. And, you know, it's Gronk.
Like, right.
He's a beast. It's going to be difficult. But if there's one safety that could do it other than Eric Berry, Malcolm Jenkins is going to give him issues.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So we'll see. I mean, it's, you know, it should be a good game. Obviously, you're pulling for Philly. I'm assuming you're going to be – you're picking Philly, clearly, if you're – you know, not that you're necessarily betting, but you're picking Philly to win.
I did bet already.
Right.
Took it in money line plus 175 before, and it was at minus 6 when I took it. Even though I bet many line, now it's minus 4.5. The line keeps going for Eagles, and now it's like plus 145. But gun to head, like if I had to choose a team to win, I'd pick the Patriots right now, like scarily close.
Yeah.
It'd be like a 23-21 game. But that score can very easily switch. It's going to be a close game no matter what.
Right.
This Eagles team will not roll over.
Well,
and there's no way it's going to be a blowout.
Yeah,
in the Eagles' favor. So
yeah, and I'm with you on the same. I mean, I don't think anyone's going to blow at anybody. I mean, again, the only way something like that could happen is if Foles just craps himself and has a terrible game and throws a few picks early. Which again, like you said, I don't see that happening. I just think Peterson's going to put him in a position where he's not going to be exposed that way. And you know, it looks like he's on. You know, on a little bit of a hot streak now, and you know, as long he doesn't have to do much. I mean, Blake Bortles didn't do much against Lucas. He played well, but he didn't do a ton. He just did enough not to lose the game. And eventually, what happened with Jacksonville was they just got, you know, they won.
If he steps up and wins that, if he steps up in any way, they win that game.
Right.
Put it that way.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I also think the play calling at the end kind of screwed them because they got way too.
Conservative.
Way too conservative.
they got conservative at the end of the second quarter. But right. the one thing that you guys have going for you, which was detrimental to the Eagles during the Falcons and Vikings game, is you to beat the Patriots, you can't fall behind. You're not coming back against the Patriots. You need to get off to a hot start because they're going to come back no matter what. And this Eagles team, especially in the first drives, have been nervous as fuck. Like way too amped up, and they haven't done well the first drive against the Vikings. They drove down the field, went up 7-0, and it looked like it was going to be a cakewalk for the Vikings the whole game. Then the Eagles settled down, took a couple deep breaths, and they came out and obviously dominated the rest of the game. But this is the biggest sporting event in the world. I'm expecting them to come out like super jacked, and that really worries me that their nerves and them being amped up is going to be a detriment to them early.
It could be. But the Patriots also, Brady's played in 7 Super Bowls and still hasn't scored in the first quarter. So, you know, that could work out for Philly as well, you know. So,
you never know.
But, so anyways, I just quickly, too, want to just run through, you know, Portnoy. Obviously, you and Portnoy got a little thing going on. I mean, everyone feuds with Portnoy. He's just like, that's the way he is, right?
You can't have a normal conversation with them. Like, you just be like, he'll walk in and be like, oh, how's the weather outside? He's like, oh, well, why wouldn't it be nice? Just like, just answer the fucking question, dude. Like, why does everything have to be an argument? Just answer the fucking questions. Have a conversation. It's just the way he is.
Yeah, it's awesome. I have to say, I saw, was that the 2015 game at the tailgate where you caught that pass over him?
Yep.
That was legit.
That it was.
That was a hell of a catch, by the way. Hell of a catch.
It's D3... tight end glory, right there.
There you go, man. There you go.
Yeah, that was one of the fondest days that I remember.
That's nice.
Barstool or ever. I was specifically brought up there to be laughed at the entire day.
Yeah.
Dave Portnoy wrote a blog before and posted it before the game even started. It was like JV Patriot Squad stomps the Eagles and published it.
That's great. Well, let's hope that doesn't happen this time, but. I mean, obviously for you, we're on different sides of the coin here. You're hoping it does, and I'm hoping it doesn't. But
have had enough success. Let the little people of Philadelphia enjoy life one time.
I know, but...
One time.
No, but see, you know, part of your life is... We don't want to... You know, you guys are the guys that get your hearts ripped out at the last minute, and we feel like it would be wrong...
The The tides are turning. The Cubs win the World Series. Like,
yeah, well, I mean,
good, good things happen to bad people. Like, let's go.
So, you know, well, we'll see. But I'm not giving anything up. Fuck you guys. No, like, honestly, you know,
I wouldn't either.
So, like, right, right. You know, that's what everyone's like, oh, the Patriots. It's like, dude, you beat us, you know? So, but anyways, it should be a hell of a game. It really should be. So we'll see. Are you going to try to sit next to Portnoy for the game? Or no, you probably not. You'd probably go nuts sitting next to him the whole game.
Well, yeah, I'd go nuts. But then again, that makes the best contact.
I was going to say, right? That's true. So, good point.
We'll see. It's going to come down to a couple of things. But if we're not in the game watching it, which would be amazing, like, amazing if that's the case, we'll be doing like an electric chair from Minnesota. And I think Roan will be in Philly. Doing like mail in the street stuff. So we get it. We'll get good stuff.
There you go. Nice. So do you guys know if you have tickets? You don't know if you have tickets to the game for sure yet or not?
We won't know until later in the week.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Cool. All right. So that's it for that. I do want to talk about Rough and Rowdy quickly you for those listeners out there that don't know what Rough and Rowdy is. Rough and Rowdy is a boxing event down in South Carolina. Is that right? South Carolina?
First of all, put boxing in quotes.
Oh, yeah, right. And West Virginia.
It's like West Virginia, North Carolina, basically any state that it's legalized, which surprisingly is very few, or unsurprisingly, they're going to do Rough and Rowdy events.
Okay. All right. Nice. So you are the main event February 16th against Sean Latham, the big homie, Sean Latham, as they're calling him at Barstool Heartland. Why, I guess, would be my question to you.
Question. excuse me. Why it's publicly it's I'm fighting myself. It's, you know, a whole storyline of I need a win. It doesn't matter who it's against, and I got called out, so I'm not going to back down from a fight. But like privately, it's good for the brand, not only Rough and Rowdy, but it's good for Sean. It's good for me to get our names out there and be front and center of the site. It's good for Rough and Rowdy to have this mojo behind it. I mean, Sean and I, like it's been said before, we don't have any beef. Like, we're nice to each other. We don't know each other that well. But it's good that two people in their 30s can go through a midlife crisis together and try to get in shape and then beat the shit out of each other and live the glory days a little bit, but no matter what, it'll be a good even brawl. And the documentaries that they're throwing together, the 24/7, I think one just released tonight. It's good stuff. Hank and the other video editor Dana do a really good job.
Nice, that's cool. Yeah, it should be a hell of a lot of fun. That's for sure. You know.
Yeah.
Now you said you were challenged. Did Latham throw the challenge down, or did someone else?
McAfee actually FaceTimed me after an Eagles game, I would say mid-December, I forget which game, but I was like I was hammered in New York, and I was with my girlfriend at the time. We were like walking to another bar, and you know, McAfee FaceTimed you, you always answer, like, right. Yes, man. So he's just like, yo, Cuzzo, what do you think about fighting $20 Chef and Rough and Rowdy? And I'm like, no. And he's like, oh, come on, it'll be fun. It's in Morgantown, my hometown. Get everyone pumped up. And I was just like kidding. I'm like, oh, well, McAfee, how about I fight you then? And he's like, dead serious. He's like, Cuzzo, I will kill you. And I'm like, yeah, you're right, man. Right. But I mean, you know, we talked it out. And it's good. It's a good thing for everyone. Do I like getting punched in the face? Not necessarily, but it's good. It's good for Barstool. And when it comes down to it, I am a company man, and I got a tattoo for the company for content. I got tased for the company for content. I mean, what's a 3-round, 1-minute round fight? Yeah,
punch in the face a few times, maybe get knocked out. No big deal. Whatever.
Yeah, have a couple beers after. Hell, I can. Like, I'm getting in the best shape of my life. Like, it's January. It's miserable anyway. Like, what else am I going to be doing? Right. I have no life.
Yeah. Like, that's awesome. That's fun. That's really cool. So, now, you've never fought before. I mean, you're from Philadelphia, so I'm sure you've fought before. But you've never,
I'm from the suburbs of Philly. Well, it's a big stipulation, because if you say you're from Philadelphia, people actually, like, from the inner city get pissed off. Like, you're not from fucking Philly. That's not Philly. It's like a whole hipster thing. So I'm like from 30 minutes outside of Philly. I lived in Philly for the past 6 years and loved it. So this up to New York. But yeah, growing up, I mean, we had like schoolyard fights. Like in college, I specifically remember going to a frat house, and like we got into a big brawl with the lacrosse team. But I mean, it was all like, you know, pulling somebody off your buddy, like getting hit once, punching once. It wasn't like a complete mano a mano fight. Yeah. And just training for this shit is exhausting. It's nothing I've ever experienced before. Like football, basketball, baseball growing up, I mean, you train. And the best way to describe it is, like, if you're training for basketball and you're forced to do suicides, that feeling, that heavy feeling you get after, like, the last one where you can't, like, breathe or get your arms up or move, that's what box training is all the time.
Yeah.
Like, all the time from start to finish. You can't even get your fucking arms up. So.
Well, it's funny. Yeah. Some of my buddies wrestled in high school and actually in college, too. And they would say the same thing, like, you know, 1 3-minute wrestling match is harder than an entire football game. They're like, you don't even understand. Yeah. And I'm like, what? But,
I believe it.
You know,
I
it makes it. Sense because it's just you and the person next to you, and you take 1 second off and see you later, you know?
Yeah, you kind of have to, like, surrender all ambitions and anything. You just have to kind of go numb and accept, yeah, this sucks. Let's just give up all hope for the next, like, minute while you're, like, you're in between, like, a jump rope set or like, maxing out. Like jabs and just hope, pray to get through it.
Yeah. So great. Well, good luck to you. And like I said, I mean, you know, I'm a Heartland guy and love Pat McAfee and $20 Chef, but he hasn't been on my show, so fuck him. So I'm rooting for Smitty. So.
Hey, you can get any fan we can. Love it.
So, well, thanks for coming, and you know, I would say good luck next weekend, but I don't really mean it. So, yeah, I hope it's an enjoyable game, and you enjoy yourself, and yeah, hopefully it's one to remember. So,
yeah, well, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely,
go fuck yourself.
Yeah, go birds. Take care, man. Okay, so it was a great interview with Smitty. Really appreciate him coming on the show again. Really great of him, and you know, obviously we don't really wish him luck. In the Super Bowl next week. But we do wish him luck in his fight against Sean Latham, February 16th, Rough and Rowdy. I think it's still $9.99, so check it out. Buy it for sure. And we'll be cheering him on. Sean Latham, I'm a fan of Sean Latham as well, but he hasn't been on the podcast, so like, what am I going to do? I have to root for Smitty. So that's the way it goes. So let's get into some segments. First, we have This Week in Sports History. The first one I'm going to give you, actually there's two of them, from January 26th. It's January 26th, 1986 and 1997. The Patriots lost Super Bowls in New Orleans on both of those days. The same date, 11 years apart. Patriots lost to the Bears in Super Bowl 20. Richard Dent was the MVP of that one, and it was 46-10. Pretty ugly. Pretty ugly. And then in Super Bowl 31, Patriots lost to the Packers, and Desmond Howard was the MVP of that one. You know, a lot of people talk about Brett Favre being one of the great quarterbacks of all time. The guy's got one Super Bowl win, and in the Super Bowl that he won, a kick returner was the MVP and not him. So it really tells you, in my opinion at least, really tells you all you need to know about Brett Favre. You know, Bedard talked about him a little bit in 07, throwing that horrendous interception to end their season. And unfortunately, you know, the Giants went on to beat the Patriots, and that ended his time there in Green Bay as well. Pretty sure it was the last throw he ever made as a Green Bay Packer. So, you know, for all the history that Favre has, and always a great player and all this and that, he's got one Super Bowl win, and in that Super Bowl, Desmond Howard was the MVP. So, you know, I don't know, just take that for what it's worth, but I think you got to kind of count that against him a little bit. So, and the last one I got for you is January 27th, 2002. Patriots beat the Steelers in Pittsburgh in the AFC Championship game. Tom Brady got hurt in this game. Drew Bledsoe came in, filled in for Brady, threw a touchdown pass. And not only that, but Troy Brown returned a punt for a touchdown and recovered a blocked field goal, which he then pitched to Antoine Harris, who scored as well. So they scored a defensive, two special teams touchdowns and won the game 24-17, and obviously went on to win Super Bowl 36 as well. So that was a hell of a game. Talk about comebacks and unbelievable, memorable games, unbelievable, magnificent game played by the Patriots in that game. You know, with the Troy Brown kick punt return for touchdown, and then the blocked field goal where he pitched it to Harris at the end. Just absolutely fantastic, and that's what they kind of made their living off of. I mean, they scored their first touchdown in the Super Bowl with a pick six. So, you know, a lot of defensive scores, a lot of special teams and defensive scores on that team in particular. I believe they set the record for it in the NFL. So, you know, a lot of great games played by them, and that was certainly certainly one of the more memorable ones. So let's get into the 3-minute drill here, and it's interesting. Well, let's start the clock here before I start talking, because I don't want to go over. I know last week we went way over the 3 minutes. I thought it was very necessary last week. This week, maybe not so much. We kind of have some a little bit more lighthearted, fun stuff to talk about. Don't really have to go over it with some serious stuff. So let's get the clock started. Here we go. All right, so you could make the argument for the 3-minute drill to talk about the Celtics. They finally broke their 4-game skid. They're going into Golden State this weekend. They are, you know, fighting for the, you know, top of the East still. And so you could, you know, make an argument for them. You could also make an argument for the Bruins. They've got a point in 17 straight games. Marchand allegedly is up to his old tricks again. I don't know how dirty of a hit that was, but he's not going to get the benefit of the doubt. He gets suspended 5 games. So now, you know, will they lose a game in here? You know, who knows? But 17 in a row getting a point is pretty damn good. And, you know, catapulted them towards the top. But I think the story of the day, to me, the story of the day is one Vince McMahon and the XFL. They're going to be reimagining the game of football. We're going to be reimagining. We have lots of great ideas about how to make the game better and safer. But here's the thing. We're not going to tell them to you. Instead, we're going to be listening to fans, to doctors, to football experts, but most importantly, to fans. You want to make action? You want more action and a faster pace of play by also making it more safe? We'll figure it out. You don't want to deal with those bad guys getting arrested? Guess what? No one in the league is allowed to get arrested, or they're out. No one with a criminal record is allowed into the XFL. We're only good guys, guys that stand for the national anthem. That's what it's all about. You want one player on each team riding a horse at all times? We'll figure it out. We'll make it happen. Because this is a reimagining of the game. It's a reimagining. And the ideas are coming from you, the fans. It's not because we don't have any ideas. Not because the XFL has no ideas. We have plenty of ideas. But we want to put the fans above everybody else. So we want you to come up with all the ideas. We have ideas. Of course we do. But we want you coming up with the ideas. We're going to put the fans first. This thing is an absolute joke. It's unbelievable. Listening to his first press conference and then listening to him take questions about, how are you going to improve safety? Well, we're going to make it safer. Do you have any ideas? Well, we're going to do a lot of listening to people. Like, they have no ideas. Literally no ideas. This thing is scheduled for 2020. I don't know how it's going to happen. Maybe it lasts for a year. Maybe it doesn't happen. I don't know. But my goodness, just hearing the beginning parts of it, I was like, this is ridiculous. And his voice, I probably did a horrendous impression, but there's the timer, but his voice was just too funny not to try. So, anyways, hope you enjoyed that. And I'm going to get you into the top 10 countdown here. Again, we're going to start at 10. So these are the most memorable games that I've been to. So not necessarily the best games I've ever played. Some of them are more memorable for me than they might be for other people. So this is just my personal list. But there's a lot of good games on here, and I think a lot of games that you guys, the listeners, will find memorable as well, that you'll remember as well. So the first one, number 10, you probably don't remember it. That's okay. I do. It's the first game that I ever attended. It was October 17th, 1993. The Patriots were playing the Houston Oilers, and Drew Bledsoe, the brand new number one pick first round quarterback, had gotten hurt the week before in Arizona, winning their first game on some awesome play where he like went diving towards the end zone and like flipped over, but he was hurt. And so instead of seeing Drew Bledsoe in my first home game, I got to see Scott Seacules, which was fantastic. And he started a quarterback for the Patriots. Warren Moon started a quarterback for the Houston Oilers. And the Patriots lost 28-14. It was a dreadfully boring game. Warren Moon threw for 2 touchdowns and, wait for it, 102 yards. Yikes. That was the game-winning quarterback. So it was an ugly, ugly game. But again, memorable for me. Number one, because it was my first game. But also, number two, I was so excited as a 9-year-old kid to be going to see Drew Bledsoe, like the new guy. And he's like the new quarterback. And I'm all pumped. And then he gets freaking hurt. And they announce midweek that he's not playing. And I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm not even going to get to see Bledsoe. So that was my first game. So that was interesting. Number nine, December 7th, 2003, they played the Dolphins and won 12-0. There was a ridiculous amount of snow in the stadium. This game I attended actually with, not with my parents. I went with a few family friends, one of my good friends, Dave Itrain, and my sister. And we actually had to clear our own seats out. The snow had happened kind of overnight and into the morning. It was an absolute mess getting into the place. We didn't even park in the stadium. We parked on like 1A because it was just an absolute mess. No one could get anywhere. It was a total nightmare. But it was a lot of fun. We had a blast. My parents actually were supposed to fly to Florida that day and got stuck in the airport because the flight got canceled. So they watched the game from Logan Airport. Again, 12-0 game. The only touchdown that was scored, actually, was Teddy Bruschi scored on a 5-yard interception return for a touchdown. That's the famous one where he's like kind of, I don't even know what he's doing. He's like kind of kneeled, dragging his legs. I'm not sure what he's doing. But either way, it was awesome. They played the Gary Glitter song, hey, right? And everyone's throwing snow up in the air as they said, hey. It was awesome. That was the first, that was the origin of that. Since anytime there's, well, now of course they don't play that song anymore, but anytime there was snow after that, people would always try to kind of copy that. And it was never really the same feeling that you got from that game. Patriots ended up getting a safety towards the end of the game as well. So they ended up winning 12-0, but it was an ugly, ugly game. But just memorable for the amount of snow that was there. I remember like we literally, the snow was so high in our seats that you couldn't even see the seats when you got there. They were just like gone. And so they had cleared out the stairs, but they hadn't cleared out any seats at all. So there's just like mounds on our seats. And so we just cleared out like basically like recliners. We were just sitting there for like the first like an hour and a half before the game because we're like, what the heck are we going to do? So we just sat there. It was a blast. That was a lot of fun that game. So number eight, another snow game. This one was October 18th, 2009. It was a 59-0 destruction of the Tennessee Titans. This is the throwback unis, so this was the 50th anniversary. It was actually, I think they played the Tennessee Oilers, or the, I don't know what they called themselves that game, but they were wearing the Oilers uniforms. Also, the refs had those ridiculous orange uniforms on, which were fantastic. It was a super crazy snowstorm. Again, as you can tell by the date, it was right before Halloween. It was actually the last home game before Halloween. And so the cheerleaders always come out in like their Halloween outfits. And these girls are in like these skimpy little outfits. And they're like dying. It's like freezing out and there's snow everywhere. And it was like ridiculous. So I think that was just the first half and they changed at halftime. But that was kind of funny. But and Brady set a record with 5 touchdowns in the second quarter at the half. It was 45-0 at the half. Brian Hoyer actually scored a touchdown in this game. Tennessee rushed for almost 200 yards in this game, okay? But their total passing yards was -7. They had -7 total passing. I mean, like, what? How do you have -7 total passing yards? And Brady throws for 5 touchdowns, and they have -7 total passing yards. Ridiculous. And, Tennessee also fumbled 6 times and lost 3 of them. So Tennessee was an absolute mess that day. They wanted nothing to do with the snow and the cold. They basically checked out halfway through that game. So, that was an absolute domination. So number 7 is November 23rd, 2013. the Patriots come back and beat the Broncos in overtime 34-31. The Broncos are up 24-0 at the half. And the Patriots look terrible in this game. Brady brings them all the way back, takes a 31-24 lead. And then Manning drives the Broncos down, and they tie it 31-31 with like just over 3 minutes left to go in the game. Ball game goes to overtime. Patriots get the ball in overtime. And I think each team had gotten the ball once. And the Patriots punt with like, I don't know, three and a half minutes left or so in overtime. And Wes Welker, in his first year in Denver, is returning the punt. And he calls fire. He tries to call off the blockers, but he calls it too late. And so the blockers don't hear him. Ball bounces, hits one of the blockers. Patriots recover it, and they end up kicking a field goal right there and winning the game. And, you know, it's just one of those moments where people are like, oh, my God. Like, how the hell did they win this freaking game? And, of course, it comes back to Wes Welker, you know, muffing. And I know he didn't muff the punt, but he, you know, it was his responsibility to either catch the ball or call that fire way earlier than everyone than he did. And he didn't, and the Patriots ended up winning. So, and the number six for me is January 18th, 2004. So this was the AFC Championship game. The Patriots beat Peyton Manning and the Colts 24-14. As a matter of fact, in the game before, the Colts had not punted the ball. They had dominated on offense and had not punted the ball at all. And I remember before the game, I said to my dad, they're not going to punt the first series either, but they're not scoring. The Patriots are going to pick Manning off. And they had like a 10-play, almost 70-yard drive. And Harrison picked Manning off in the end zone at the end of the first drive. And I was like, I knew it. And then I believe it was the first play of the second drive. Ty Law picked off Peyton Manning for his first of three interceptions that day, and they were fantastic. So it was actually the first AFC Championship game that the Patriots had won at home, right? They won 85 on the road. They won 90. Oh, no, that's not true. 97 was at home as well, but this is the first one that I was at least. That was a lot of fun. And they didn't do it at home again until 2011, which you might hear again on this list. You never know. But that year, actually, in 03, it was pretty interesting because the co-MVPs that year were McNair and Manning. They beat McNair in the divisional round game for Tennessee, obviously, and they beat Manning in the AFC Championship game. So in back-to-back weeks, they beat the co-MVPs that year. They were a wagon in 03 and a hell of a lot of fun to watch, and that was a great game. So that's number six on my list. So next week, I'll have 5 through 1. Lots and lots of memorable games in there. You're going to remember pretty much all of them, mostly. But a lot of great games in there, a lot of good memories. And, you know, I've been really lucky and fortunate to attend a lot of these games. And so, you know, not everyone has. But even if you haven't been there, you've probably been watching. And so you probably have your own memories for those games and whatnot. So, you know, think about that. And I did ask, you know, Bedard about his most memorable game. And I asked Smitty about his as well. So that's pretty cool. Just to kind of, you know, remember those things that you kind of have. Because everyone has those games that really stick with you, you know. So anyways, that's all I got for this week. Thanks for listening. I really appreciate it. Listen, one quick thing I did want to address before I let you go here. I know Mike hasn't been on the last few episodes. Mike's taking a leave of absence from the show. We don't know how long it's going to be honest with you. He may come back, he may not. I'm not really sure. He's got some stuff going on, which is fine. We're going to let him deal with that, and that's okay. And then we'll go from there. But the show is going to go on, and you know, we'll keep bringing on, you know, good guests and keep trying to do the best we can. And you know, maybe Mike will be back one day, maybe he won't. But either way, the show is going to go on, and he's still a fan of the show, and you know, we're still on good terms, everything like that. So don't worry about that. But just want to let you guys know, if you were wondering where he was, that's where he was. So, again, quick shout-out to MDOT and Core for doing the outro music here. MDOT is at MDOT Boston on Instagram and Twitter. You can also find his newest album, Ego and the Enemy, on iTunes. And Core is at Core of EMS, K-O-R-E of EMS. He's on Twitter as well. And for us, we are Weekend War Pod. Is our email, Instagram, Twitter handle as well, okay? It's Weekend War Pod with no E's. So it's WKND, WARPOD. I know it's a hand. I know it's a mouthful there, right? But it's very simple. It's just Weekend War Pod with no E's. Okay? And our email address is weekendwarpod@gmail.com. Again, that's no E's in there. All right? And you can find us also on Facebook at Weekend Warrior Podcast. And, you know, subscribe to us on iTunes. We're all over the place, right? iTunes, we're on, you know, Stitcher. We are on all sorts of those. You know, anywhere you can find us. We're also on blogtalkradio.com if you want to check them out. We recently switched over to Blog Talk Radio from Blueberry. So blogtalkradio.com, you search for Weekend Warrior, and we're on there as well. So if you got to listen on your computer instead of listening on your phone. But we appreciate you listening. Thanks for coming along. And, I mean, shoot, next week is the freaking Super Bowl. So we had a really good week of preparation this week, kind of getting ready for the game, breaking down the game a little bit. Next week, we're going to have a few more guys on the show, and they're going to kind of break down the matchup even more, kind of get a little bit more in-depth to what we think will happen in the game. Maybe we'll get some picks going, and, you know, it'll be another week closer to the game, so I'm sure there'll be all the storylines will be out and everything like that. So, and definitely next week, we'll be touching on the Tom versus Time Facebook thing. I know it came out Thursday afternoon. I've seen it, but I figured, you know, I didn't really want to talk about it just yet. So we'll probably talk about that next week. There'll be a few more episodes out next week, so we'll talk about that as well. So thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Simmons, no timeouts. Got to go. Williams, three. Yes!
You don't need to tune in. This is a show, bro. Put the game upside down like a stroke, bro. Weekend Warriors, it's a podcast. Call the commentary, kid, I call trash.
Warriors, come out to play.
Weekend Warriors, it's a podcast. What you call the commentary, kid, I call trash.
Hey, yo,
WCP. We Warriors, especially on the weekend. Looking for that sports talk, this is where it be, man. Breakdowns on your favorite teams and all that. Hear about the starters long before the ball snap. You can call Pat or go ahead and call Mike, cause we here all night, no time to stall, right? 2 seconds left, clutch shot, it's go time. Knuckles on the O-line, watch the losers go wine.
Turn me up on that radio dial. It's been a while since I played, but I'm here with a smile. I'm taking jump shots, get them in and I'm out. I'm breaking records like Bill Russell, kid has got muscle. Being polite when I'm Pat and his mic, you see the city of champs coming to victory dance, buddy. It's radio talk, so turn it up when it's on. We're gonna listen and rock to what it is that you want.
Warriors, you'll need to tune in. This is a show, bro.